All right, we're beginning here, five lines down on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Ibailuhu, Amar Yayin She'eni To'em Yovel. So over here, the language is a little bit sparse, and it's not really clear what he's saying in the Neder. We just finished a Gemara discussing whether the word Shana means Hashana, or it means Shana Achat. And the same thing with Shavua, or any of these other words, if you don't use Hashana or Hashavua, this, what do you mean when you say the generic term, a year, a yovel? All of these terms, we just discussed that in the Gemara, as to whether that is the equivalent of saying zeh, that it's this item, or is the equivalent of saying achat. And the Gemara was somewhat inconclusive about that. And therefore, as the Ran says, in Lina Halacha, given to bind lo yifshita, the question that was not resolved, naktinan l'chumra, nidarim eredindo raita, and therefore we're going to go to chumra. So for now, for the Gemara to open up with a question, which seemingly was unresolved right before, makes it sound like that's not the question or that's not the focus of the Gemara. And therefore, you can see in the Balei HaTosafot, he says, Hu adin, the matzlim bayi ki amar hayovel. The question could have been equally asked, whether or not when he says yovel, but when he says hayovel, the Rosh says, im amar yovel zeh, if he says yovel zeh. So as opposed to Tosafot, it said he could have said that, the Rosh says specifically that he did say that. He said yovel zeh, and the Ran seems to take a similar approach as the Rosh, which is alahacha b'omer yovel zeh askinan v'lo dak b'lishnei. The Gemara wasn't so careful with its language, so the question really revolves around this. When he says yain she'ani to'em or she'ani to'em yovel, what he meant is yovel zeh, during this yovel, my, what's the din in this case? So here the question is similar to all the questions that were in the Mishnah before, which is when you take a neder with regards to Shabbat, you take it with regards to Chodesh Zeh, Shabbat Zoh. All those instances, we wanted to know which day, which structure does it belong to? Is Shabbat part of the next week or part of the previous week? Is the Rosh Chodesh the end of the previous month or the beginning of the next month? So the same question arises here with regards to Yovel. The Yovel, the Jubilee year, is it the beginning of the next cycle or is it the completion of the previous cycle? Now again, by the fact that it's the 50th year, already makes it sound like it is the completion of the previous year. But as we'll see in the Gemara, there is a daya that is not exactly the case. So now, my Shnat Chamishim Kilifnei Chamishim, is the 50th year like the previous cycle? It's a part of the previous cycle. Oh, Kalachar Chamishim. Or is it the beginning of the next cycle? And similar to what we saw yesterday in the Machloket Rishonim, as to how to explain the Mishnah, where Rashi says, you're standing in the time period which we're speaking about. You're standing on Shabbat and you're saying Shabbat Zo. Or you're standing on Rosh Chodesh and saying Chodesh Zeh. And the Balei HaTosafot who said, no, you're standing in the middle of the month, the middle of the week. Or here, you're standing in the middle of the Yovel, the 25th year, somewhere in the middle, and saying Yovel Zeh. So the same explanations would be applicable over here. Rashi says you're standing in the Yovel year. And the question being posed is, when you take this neder and you say Yovel Zeh, this Jubilee, do you mean the upcoming 50-year cycle? So the next 50 years, that's what you're speaking about? And the Yovel in which you're speaking about has no relevance to that because it's part of the previous Yovel cycle. Or when you say Yovel Zeh, if this Yovel is the beginning of that cycle, then it would be that you are asur in this Yovel as well as the upcoming 49 years. So that's the question according to Rashi. According to Tosafot, the question is, if you're in the middle of the Yovel, you say, this Yovel I'm taking the nether for when you get to the 50th year. Or is the nether terminated before the Yovel? Because the Yovel belongs to the upcoming cycle. Or does it only terminate at the end of the Yovel? Because the Yovel is a part of the previous cycle. It's the 50th year for the 49 years that passed before it. Tashma, Titanyo, we have a Braita that really is, this is a Machloket Tanaim. Plukta, the Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan. It's a Machloket Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbanan as to the status of Yovel. Bikidashtem et shnata chamishim shana, that you will sanctify the 50th year. Shnata chamishim atamone, you count the 50th year to sanctify it. Viatamone shnat chamishim ve'achat. I'm going to explain the Gemara according to Rashi. Rashi that's found in Rosh Hashanah, the Bach note, and there are other girsaot that leave out the vav here and say shnat chamishim achat. So if you leave out the vav, then the interpretation that we're going to use, even with the vav in it, is similar to that, which is that the 50th year is counted as the 50th year, and it does not count as the 50th year as well as the first year. So you can't be both the 50th year as well as first year. So the Rabbanon say that the Jubilee year, the Yovel, is the completion of a cycle of 49 years, and the Yovel is the 50th year. On the other hand, we're going to have a Shita, which obviously the Chachamim are coming to dismiss, which says that the Jubilee year, which is the 50th year, is also the first year. Kanamru, Yovel ein ole leminyan shavua. Based on the Chachamim's position, the Yovel does not count to the years of the Shemitah cycle. That means that you will have 7 Shemitah cycles, 7 times 7, and have 49 years. And then Yovel will be the 50th year. After you complete the 50th year, you will start another cycle of 49 years. That means in a 100-year period, you'll have 98 years of 14 Shemitah cycles, and you'll have 2 Yovelot. And you'll have 2 times. In the 50th and 100th year, you'll have a Yovel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yovel ole the minyan shavua. That Yovel counts as the first year of the next 7-year cycle. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the way it works is that the 50th year, yes, is the completion of a cycle. You have 49 years in the 50th year, but that Yovel is not only the completion of the previous cycle, it's also the first year of the next cycle. So that means that you complete 49 years, and then you have a Yovel, which is the 50th year, but the 50th year is also the first year of the next 49-year cycle. And that means in order to have a series where you would have a Yovel included in it, after 49 years, the 50th year is a Yovel. That's also the first year of the next 49-year cycle. So then you would have 49 back-to-back with another 49. And then you would have a Yovel again, but that Yovel would be the beginning of the next 49-year cycle. So in 100 years, you would only have 98 years, according to this, according to Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, technically you have 99 because the Yovel will be in that 99th year, but that again will begin the next cycle. So the Yovel does not have a placeholder. It does not take up a year in the cycle, but cycles only run in the 49 years. And the 50th year is the beginning of the next cycle. That's Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. So Amr lo the Rabbi Yehuda. So the Chachamim posed this question to Rabbi Yehuda. Hari Omer, the Pasuk says, Sheish Shanim Tizras Adecha, that for 6 years you will work and plant the field, and then in the 7th year you will desist from that. It will be Meshavta Aretz Shabbat Hashem, that it will be a Shabbaton La Aretz in the 7th year. So like you work 6 days of the week, and the 7th day is Shabbat, so to over here, you'll work 6 years in the field, and the 7th year will be the Shemitah. Vein Kan Ela Chamesh, according to your Shita, there's only 5. Because in the first 7-year cycle, the first year of that cycle is the Ovel. The 7th year is Shemitah. That means that there only remains 5 years in between in which you can work the fields. So how do you explain the Pasuk according to your Shita, Rabbi Yehuda? How do you make the Pasuk work? Now, it's clear that in all the other 7-year cycles during that series, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees that there's 6 years of working years and the 7th year will be Shemitah. But what the Chachamim are saying to him, that the Pasuk has got to apply to everywhere, to all the cases. Well, it applies to 6 out of the 7 year cycles, but the first 7-year cycle, according to you, is not a full 6 years of work. It's only 5 years of work. Amar lehem, ledivreichem. So Rabbi Yehuda poses the question back to the Chachamim. Hari Omer, doesn't the Pasuk say, bas'at et atvuah l'shlosh shanim, that the produce of the 6th year will suffice for 3 years? So this is in a normal cycle. In a normal cycle, you plant in the 6th year, you harvest in the 6th year, you use that in the 6th year, you need it for the Shemitah year, which is the 7th year, and then you need it in the 8th year until the produce of the 8th year is harvested. And the truth is, it's not a full 3 years, because you're talking about the end of the 6th year, and then you're becoming the full 7th year, and then most of the 8th year. So in a quote-unquote me'eit le'eit situation, it's really 2 years, but it spans across 3 years. And so the Torah says that the 6th year will provide you sufficient produce to take care of you in the 6th, 7th, and 8th years. Harei kan arba. But according to you, there's actually a period in time where you're going to have 4 years where you'll need produce. In the 49th year of the Shemitah cycle, year 48 is the 6th year, and 49 is the 7th year Shemitah. So when you harvest in the 6th year, you'll need for that 6th year itself, you'll need for year 49, which is the Shemitah year, you'll need for year 50, which is a Yovel year, and then you'll need for year 51, which is the beginning of the next cycle, until you plant and harvest there. So that will require 4 years of produce. So if you tell me that when the Torah speaks like this, it's got to encompass every part of the cycle, then how do you explain, according to your shita, the fact that the produce in the sixth year suffices for 3 years? Once in a yovel, you will acquire 4 years of produce. So that's the question Rabbi Yehuda poses. And Rashi notes over here, V'hai pircha l'divri akohi. The question Rabbi Yehuda is posing is even on himself. The Rabbi Yehuda nami ikal mifrach. Because you could ask this question Rabbi Yehuda. Because even though Rabbi Yehuda believes that the yovel is the first year of the next cycle, he still believes that there's a back-to-back situation in which you have a 49th year that is Shemitah. The first year of the next cycle is the yovel where you can't plant. So according to him, you still will need 4 years of produce. This question that Rabbi Yehuda poses is not only on the Chachamim, it's on himself. But what he's trying to make the point is that just like there, you're not going to be able to explain the Torah's stipulation in all cases, so too, I don't need to explain the Torah's position in all cases. And that's what he says here. What's clear is, the meaning of the pasuk is, it applies to the 6 out of the 7 parts of the cycle. That's what you have to say. That's how you're going to answer, Chachamim, and that's how I'm going to answer that pasuk. Dili nami. Same thing for me, in the case of Asa'at et atuad l'shlosh ha-shanim, ikal ukma b'shar shnei ha-shavua. I'm just going to tell you, I'm showing you from this pasuk, it's a question on me too, but I'm showing you from this pasuk, it's clear that when the Torah talked about it, it talked about it in the normal case. In any case, that's not a yovel. That's what it's speaking about. So the pasuk that you brought as a question on me, I can answer the same way, that it's speaking about every year, besides the situation in which there is a yovel. Now, this is a small piece of this Gemara. The Gemara brought it over here to indicate that the answer to our question about the 50th year is reliant on this machloket, which is the Chachamim believe that the 50th year, the Yovel, is the completion of the previous cycle, whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that the Yovel is the first year of the new cycle. So it's both Chamishim, it's the Jubilee, the Yovel of the previous 49 years, but it's also the first year of the next cycle, and therefore it'll be considered like the beginning of a cycle. So when it comes to Nidarim, and you want to know where the Chamishim belongs, where does the Yovel belong, it'll depend if you hold like the Chachamim, or do you hold like Rabbi Yehuda. That's why it's brought over here. This is a short piece of Gemara. There's much more extensive Gemarot in Arachin, which is the main sugya that deals with this, and Rosh Hashanah in Avodah Zarah. This sugya appears in a number of places. Over there, there is a major machloket amongst the Rishonim as to how do we paskin. Do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, or do we paskin like the Chachamim? Now, part of the problem, which is the question that you're posing over here, is why don't they just look at the historical precedent as to what happened during the Yovel? So one of the problems is that when they go into Galut, they don't count the Yovel. So that's for 70 years. But you say, okay, that was 70 years. Bayit Sheni. Once they came back from Bayit Sheni, then we could have known then about the Yovel. So the truth is that during Bayit Sheni, they also did not keep the Yovel and did not count the Yovel. So therefore, there was a very long period of time in which they didn't practice the Yovel or they were not counting the Yovel. And therefore, it was unclear as to what the historical precedent was by the time they're discussing this, or the Tanaim are discussing this. It's been many years since there's been a Yovel. And there is actually a Machloket Rishonim and Bayit Sheni, what exactly they did about the Yovel, and things that are connected to the Yovel during that period of time. It's actually a Gemara in Gittin, and there it's a Shita of the Rabbeinu Tam versus many of the other Rishonim as to what the status of Yovel was during Bayit Sheni. So the confusion or the problem or the Safek is not just a modern phenomenon when the Tanaim are speaking about it or even the Amoraim are speaking about it, but it was also a problem during the time of Bayit Sheni because they really had lost any historical precedent for this. That's number one. The Shemitah also falls into the same problem. And part of that problem is this issue, which is that knowing which year of the Shemitah will depend on whether you think we count like Chachamim or we count like Rabbi Yehuda. Because according to the Chachamim, the Yovel will put a placeholder year in there, which will actually be Doche the cycle and push out the cycle an extra year. So that actually would change which year is a Shemitah year. So therefore, the machloket about the Yovel also has implication as to when the Shemitah is. And there is a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to the count of the Shemitah. With the Shemitah, something incredible happens. And I would say the same thing in the modern era happens again, which is that in the time of the Rambam, there is a major machloket as to when the Shemitah, or which year is the Shemitah year. The Rambam himself comes up with a calculation, and it does not agree with the other Shitot. Rashi and the Reed themselves also argue about which year is the Shemitah years. In general, the deference went to Rashi's count, But an amazing thing happened with the Rambam, which is the Rambam says, even though I think the Shemitah is this based on my calculations, based on what I think, and on the halacha that I want to paskin, nevertheless, there's a Mesorah amongst the Geonim and amongst the people that this is the year of the Shemitah. And out of deference for that Mesorah, I'm going to say that that's the Shemitah year. So the Rambam, despite disagreeing, out of deference to the Mesorah, says that the Shemitah is the years that based on what the Geonim and others say. So at the time of the Rambam already, you have this idea that there is a Mesorah that comes from the Geonim, and the Rishonim, despite their disagreements maybe with it, still seem to defer to that Shita of the Geonim. And the same thing happened in the modern era when they came back and they restarted the Shemitah cycles here in Eretz Yisrael. I would say the Yeshuv was much smaller and probably much easier to deal with, but there are amongst the Rishonim many different Shitot of the guards when Shemitah should be now. And probably a 4 out of the 7 years in any Shemitah cycle, probably is Shemitah, according to some Rishon. Nevertheless, when they restarted it, they used that Mesorah, and it's been accepted by everyone. Everybody agrees when the Shemitah year is. I mean, can you understand what type of miracle that is? That the entire Jewish nation agrees that Shemitah is the Shemitah year that we currently have. So again, it's an amazing thing that both in the time of the Rishonim and today, that we have a single count of when the Shemitah is. And everybody agrees to that, despite the fact that there is machloket, and despite the fact that it's not so straightforward. Now, the machloket about the Yovel is a pretty serious machloket amongst the Rishonim, and does have nafkaminot lo'alocha. Do we paskin like the Chachamim, or do we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda? Now, if you paskin like the Chachamim, then you're going to have to leave in a year for the Yovel in the interim. And then if you paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need to leave a year for the Yovel, and that will change the calculation of when your Shemitah year is. It will also have implications about the cycles, Maaseh Sheni, Maaseh Ani. It has huge implications in terms of the counting of the years and the cycling of the years. Once again over here, it's very interesting. The Rambam himself believes that the Locha is like the Chachamim. He says that in the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchot Shemitah v'Yovel in Perek Yud, explicitly states that the Locha is like the Chachamim. But then once again, he writes something else. He writes that there's a Mesorah from the Geonim as to when the Shemitah is, as well as the fact that we don't count the Yovel in the years. He writes it in the there's a Shuta Rambam that speaks about this. He says, V'afal pi shalei Yovel b'mei Ezra, even though there was no Yovel in the time of Ezra, manu Yovlot. They counted the Yovel anyway. Kedereit, the Kadesh Shemitim. So in order to know when to have the Shemitah, Shein Shnat HaYovel Oleh Neminyan Shnei Shavua Livet HaChachamim V'Hen HaLocha. He paskins like the Chachamim. And he says in the time of Ezra, even though they didn't keep Yovel, they counted the Yovel. And then he says again, Aval Matzanu Tshuva L'Gon Rabbeinu Hai Tzatzal. I have a Tshuva from Rabbeinu Hai that says this, Zinyana Sheminyan Mishon Lo Batel V'Shalav Anach Somchim Aval Lo Manu Yovlot Mishcharav Bayit HaRishona. That the Rav Hai and the Geonim have this Mesorah, that they stopped counting the Yovel from the time of the Churban. El Shmitim Bovad, only Shemitah. V'amar Bota Tshuva, Shecheshbon Yerushahu B'yedehem, that this is a Mesorah of antiquity, V'ish Sturah B'fi HaKol, Kach Nimtza Katuv B'Shuvot Shekodim Rabbeinu Hai Geon Zatzal, not only in the Tshuvot Rav Hai, but in Tshuvot that came before him, Mekama Shanim K'divrei HaGeon, U'lufi Cheshbon Zeh Nimtza Bayit Charav B'motzei Shvi'it, that we'll say in the keynote on Tisha B'Av, that the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed on Motzei Shvi'it, Kamosha Amarnu, Tiyashanu Zo, Shiyaba Meyot Ushmonim Yishesh Lishterot, Shnat Shemitah. And therefore the year that I'm writing this in is also a Shnat HaShemitah. Then he makes the point, V'lishkiachu al elu advarim shnipashu b'gmarot arachin klau, kilu enim tuvim. It's as if the Geonim and all of these Shitot ignore everything that is written in the Gemara in Arachin. So the Rambam makes it clear that he thinks the Locha is like the Chachamim, but despite that fact, he says the Geonim have a very strong Mesorah that from the Zman HaChurban, they no longer keep the Yovel, and therefore the Shemitah cycle just cycles in 7 years, 7 years, and they don't worry about the Yovel at all. And once again, the Rambam, here in the Perek Yud Mechilchot Shemitah Yovel in Balocha Hei and Alocha Vav, defers to this Mesorah of the Geonim, even though he doesn't agree with it. He says at the end of this, he says, Kufi cheshbon ze anu morim li'in masrot u'shvi'it v'shmatat ksafim sh'akabalah v'hamaseh amudim gdolim behora'ah u'behen ra'oi li'hitalot. He says that the Mesorah is so powerful and therefore we're going to put ourselves on the Mesorah. It's coming from the Rambam, quintessential intellectual person who thinks through everything and says the halacha like he thinks it is, despite the fact that he's arguing on everyone else. Over here, he defers to Mesorah and tells you the power of Mesorah is so strong that I'm deferring to that even though I disagree with it. Now, the Ravid on the spot argues in the Rambam. He says that how does the Rambam know that the Gaonim Shita is that it changed at the time of the Churban? The way the Rambam summarizes the Shita of the Gaonim is that until Churban Abayit, they counted the Ovel and they had a placeholder in there even though they didn't keep the Ovel. After the Churban, that changed. Ravid says, how do you know that? Maybe we just paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. Can we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda after the Churban? And we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda before the Churban? How does he know that there was a Yovel beforehand? The Ravid himself says, I don't accept that. I don't hold like the Gaonim, and I don't hold like the Rambam either. Shainam notim the Yovel achar Churban shem zecher kedusha, elo kashar shnei shavua shem chol. Mekol makom, chamishim hei monim, telo k'Rabbi Yehuda. He says, no, but we still count 50 years, like the Chachamim. Just happens to be that the 50th year has no Kedusha anymore. Since it doesn't have any more Kedusha, then we don't give it a separate name or separate placeholder within the calendar. So maybe even according to the Chachamim, the cycling of the 50 years, we still count the 50 years, but the 50th year no longer has any demarcation by itself because it no longer has any Kedusha. That's the right with Shita. There's a very large Reb Chaim that speaks about it here. And he speaks about exactly that. This idea that when it comes to Yovel, that Yovel is not something like Shemitah. Shemitah is like Shabbat, which is Kitshe V'Kaima. It happens whether we want it or not. Whether we are Mekalish or not. It's automatic. On the other hand, Yovel is much more like Yom Tov. And just like Yom Tov requires Bnei Yisrael to be Mekadesh at the Chodesh, and therefore determine when Yom Tov is, and that's why we say Mekadesh Yisrael Vazmanim. So too, Yovel requires a counting of Beitin. Without a minyan of Beitin, there is no Yovel, and the Yovel doesn't exist. It's as if it is not there. And that's what Reb Chaim says is the explanation for this Shita. Once Beitin no longer engages in counting of the Yovel year, there just isn't any Yovel year. It doesn't exist. Yovel will only exist once Beitin engages to count the Yovel. But if there's no Beitin to count the Yovel, then there is no Yovel. And that's how he explains the change in the din. When there was a Beitin that was counting and enumerating the Yovel, then there was a Yovel. And they counted the year. And it was one of the 50 years. And it was part of the cycle. After the Churban HaBayit, where the Beitin stopped engaging in the counting of the Yovel, then there's no longer a Yovel. It doesn't exist. It won't exist without Beitin actually making a count and starting the count for the Yovel. And that's why in the modern era, or post the Churban, we don't have a Yovel, because you can't have Yovel unless you Mekadesh the Yovel, and we don't have a Beit Din that is assuming the count to make the Yovel. So therefore, it may not have anything to do whether Yovel is Doraita or Derabbanan. It just has to do with whether Beit Din engages in the counting of the Yovel. Alright, we'll leave this sugya behind. Again, it's a very extensive sugya on the Gemara and Arachin, and has more and more implications in the upcoming years. Probably over the next 7 years will become very much halacha lemaaseh, because Yovel might become and Deoraita, which is that Yovel is only applicable when Rov Yoshve Aleha, the majority of Jews, live inside of Eretz Yisrael. And we are fast approaching that point where the majority of Jews in the world will be in Eretz Yisrael, and that will actually change the status of Yovel. It might require us to start counting the Yovel because of the fact that now it's changing into a Din Doraita rather than simply a Din Derabanan. And obviously it has major implications in terms of Shemitah as well, because then Shemitah will come Doraita, not only Derabanan. So this issue will become a serious issue over the next number of years because of the population factors that are weighing heavily in favor of Eretz Yisrael becoming the home to the majority of Jews in the world. Alright, so now we continue. The Gemara here now continues with the Mishnah Ad HaPesach. So we discussed yesterday in the end of the Mishnah when he says Ad Pnei HaPesach, that's the girsa again of Rashi, the Rosh, the Ran, not Ad Pnei HaPesach, but Ad Pnei HaPesach. Or there we had a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi as to what that meant. Rabbi Meir says that means until Pesach begins. Pnei HaPesach means you're facing Pesach. And Rabbi Yossi says no, Ad Pnei HaPesach means until the last moment of Pesach, until Pesach has elapsed. Now the Gemara assumes that the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, and we mentioned this yesterday, has to do with how you view Safek. Lememra, The Rabbi Meir Savar, lo mayil inche nafshe l'sfeika. A person doesn't put himself in a position of safek. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Rabbi Yossi believes, mayil inche nafshe l'sfeika. A person does put themselves into a position of safek. So now the difference in their opinion is when a person makes a statement. Now the statement has one clear interpretation. Everybody agrees when you say ad pnei Pesach that you definitely meant until Pesach. That much everybody can agree on, and there's no safek or no question about that. The other part, which is questionable, is did you also mean the entirety of Pesach until Pesach is complete? Now, the ad pnei Pesach can be interpreted both ways. It could mean until pnei Pesach means before Pesach, or it could mean until the tail end of Pesach. We saw in the Rosh yesterday that it could be any one of three options. It could be the beginning of Pesach. It could be before the end of Pesach. It could be the end of Pesach. The word and the expression has multiple possibilities about how to interpret it. So what Rabbi Meir says is when a person takes the neder and we're unsure as to the interpretation, we will only take up the interpretation which is certain. Because people, when they take a neder and when they make statements, their statements only include items where they are certain that is the meaning of what they are saying. They don't include in their statement things that are not so certain. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says when a person makes a statement, he means to include anything that's possible to be explained under that statement. That means both that which is obvious, as well as things that are possible explanation of those words. So that's what happens here. Rabbi Meir says, only until Pesach, because that's the only stuff that we know for sure is true. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, you can go even to the end of Pesach, because Pesach itself is also a plausible explanation of Ad Pnei Pesach, and therefore you wait till the end. Veramini, is that really the sheet of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi? Mi sheesh lo shtei kitei banot. An individual who has two families of girls, mishtei nashim, from two different women. So he had, let's call it two girls from wife A, and then he had, subsequent to that, two girls from wife B. Vamar, he says, kidashti et biti hagedola. I married off my eldest daughter, ve'eni yodea, and now I don't know what I meant. Im gdolash gdolot. And I said, my oldest daughter, does that mean the oldest of all of the daughters? Meaning the firstborn girl to wife A? Im gdolash b'tanot. Or did I mean my oldest daughter from my second wife? Meaning the first daughter from wife B? Or, v'im tanash b'gdolot. Or did I mean daughter number two from wife A? Because she's still older than all of the girls born to the second wife. She gdola, min gdolash b'tanot. She is older than all of the girls born to the second woman. Kulan asurot divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir means, out of this safek, all of them are asurot. Chutz, with the exception of minaktanash b'ktanot. The youngest daughter to the youngest group, obviously is not the one that he meant. So she's the only one who's obvious that could not be included under the terminology of gdola. So therefore, she is not b'safek married. All the other daughters are b'safek married. Because in relationship to that youngest daughter, they are also gidolot. And because they are older daughters, any one of those could be included in what he said. Rabbi Yossi Omer, kulan mutarot. All of them are mutar chutz min hagdolash b'gdolot, with the exception of the oldest girl to the first set, meaning that wife A's first daughter is the only one who is b'safek over here. So now, the opinions of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi are about this issue of safek. Rabbi Yossi is saying that a person, when he says gdola, he doesn't make an unclear statement, gdola, meaning it could be anybody who's older. Gdola means my oldest daughter, my eldest daughter. That's the only one that could mean, and everybody else is mutar. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir says, no, when you say oldest daughter or elder daughter, that doesn't necessarily mean just the oldest daughter. It means anyone's older than someone else. Because when a person makes a statement, we give it the greatest meaning. It covers the greatest scope of what the word could mean, and therefore could mean any of these daughters, with the exception of the youngest daughter of the youngest group. So here you see that Rabbi Meir's opinion is that people are mayel lehem l'safek. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is that they are not mayel l'safek. Well, based on that, that's just the opposite of what's said in our Mishnah. No problem. I'm Rabbi Chanina bar Rav Dime, Marav, we mentioned this yesterday, Mukhlefet Hashita. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi's positions in our Mishnah are flipped or reversed. V'hatanya, and Hatanya is benichuta, and we have a braita that supports that version of our Mishnah. Ze'aklal. This is the principle. Kol shizmanu kavua, anything that has a fixed time to it. Ve'amar ad pnei, and then he uses the terminology ad pnei. Rabbi Meir ad sheyetzei. Rabbi Meir says until the entire Pesach is finished, which is the opposite of what he says in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Hachiyagia, that only until Pesach, until the beginning of Pesach, again, which is the opposite of what he says in our Mishnah, but if you flip our Mishnah, then it corresponds with this Braita, and that's exactly what Rabbi Chanina is saying. Rabbi Chanina Bar Avdime, in the name of Rab, is saying that the Mishnah got Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi's positions reversed, and if you flip them, then it will correspond to the Braita, and it also will match up with their Machloket that we had from the Gemara in Kiddushin. Now, that's the conclusion of the Gemara. Based on this conclusion of the Gemara, we would say, Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yossi, whenever you have a Machloket of Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi, Alocha ke Rabbi Yossi. The Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. Over here, Rabbi Yossi's opinion is, Aji Agia. Rabbi Yossi says a person is not mildly safek, doesn't put himself into a safek, and therefore if you use the term ad penei, it would only mean until the beginning of Pesach and no more. Because you would paskin like Rabbi Yossi. And in Okanami, that is the position of the Rambam. On the other hand, the Gemara in Kiddushin raises the same question that we raised over here. But the Gemara in Kiddushin has a different conclusion. Instead of saying Mukhlevet HaShita, like we say here, the Gemara says, introduces that possibility and says, Lo Tachluf, you don't have to switch it around. I have a better answer. The Machlokah between them is about what the word Pnei means. Does Pnei mean Adli Pnei HaPesach? Or does Pnei HaPesach mean Ad Shiyifnei HaPesach, until it has passed? And the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi is, what is the meaning of the word Pnei? Does the word Pnei mean ad lifnei, until before? Does it mean ad shifnei, until it has been completed and ended? Therefore, the machlok is about the interpretation of the word Pnei. Now, based on that, if you do not flip their positions, and now you have a machlok with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, halacha Rabbi Yossi would mean that the halacha is that you'd have to wait until Pesach is over. So now you have a question as to how to paskin. Is it like Rabbi Yossi in the Gemara in Kiddushin, and the way that our Mishnah is written now, which means you have to wait until Pesach is over? Or is it Rabbi Yossi in the Braita here, and Rabbi Yossi once you flip our Mishnah, like the conclusion of the Gemara here in Nidarim, and therefore it would only be until Pesach? Which way do we paskin? So we said before that the Rambam paskins, like our Sugi over here, Mukhlevet HaShita, you flip it, and we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, that means Ad Lifnei HaPesach, until the beginning of Pesach. Now, the reason to do that, when you have a machloket between the sugyot, one of the principles that we usually invoke is, which sugya belongs there? So when you have a sugya about Nidarim, and it's found in Kiddushim, and you have a sugya of Nidarim that's found in Nidarim, we will give more weight to the Gemara's explanation in Masechet Nidarim than we will give to it in Masechet Kiddushin, because of the fact that it's topically relevant. And therefore, the topically relevant sugya within its own Masechta governs. Because we assume that that has a better outcome or has been looked over more carefully, and therefore we would generally go with the sugi over here. And that's what the Rambam does. He paskins like the sugi over here. On the other hand, the Ramban disagrees, and he paskins like the sugya in Kiddushin. And he says, Aloch is like Rabbi Yossi based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, which means leaving Rabbi Yossi intact in our Mishnah, and therefore the Aloch would be that you'd have to wait at Sheitzeh Pesach until Pesach is completed, until the end of Pesach. The reason that he might do that is because, as we've seen throughout Nidarim, Nidarim is not as well redacted as many of the other Masechtot. It is not as well preserved in terms of its Lashon and in terms of its structure. And therefore, the Ramban might give more weight to the Gemara in Kiddushin than he does to the Gemara here in Nidarim. And inclusive of the fact that the Gemara in Kiddushin knows about the answer here of the Gemara in Nidarim, because it acknowledges that answer and then says no. As well as the fact that the sheet over there is by an Amora who is a Batro, and therefore we would paskin like the Amora who is a Batro. So that is a machloket as to which conclusion of the Gemara governs, whether it's our Gemara here or the Gemara in Kiddushin. Okay, the next Mishnah says, Ada Katsir, Ada Batsir, Ada Mesik. All of these are types of harvest. In the Hebrew language, every item has its own word in terms of harvesting. Katsir usually refers to tvuah, to grains. Ada batsir refers to grapes. Ada misik refers to olives. So here you have the different fruits. We're talking about these different types of harvests based on the type of fruit that we are speaking about. Eino asur eled shiagia. If he uses any of these terms, then you only asur until it begins. Zeaklau. This is the principle that one should follow. Kol shizmano kavua. Anything that has a fixed time. Ve'amar ad shiagia. And he uses the terminology until it comes, asur ad shiagia. Then he says asur until it starts. Amar ad shiahei. He says until it has happened, till it has passed, asur achiyitzei, then it's until he completes the entirety of that time period. Like we saw before in the Mishnah with Pesach. It says achiyagia Pesach, that means until before Pesach. Achiyaya Pesach means until after Pesach. That's only true with items that are zmano kavua, that have a fixed time. B'chol she'en zmano kavua, whatever does not have a fixed time, ben amar achiyahe, ben amar achiyagia, whether he says until it has passed or it has happened, ben amar achiyagia, until it comes, enu asur achiyagia. Then the person only has sur until the start of whatever that time period is. So now the Mishnah lays out here a difference between things that are zmano kavua and devar she'en zmano kavua. In general, the Rishonim explain something that is zmano kavua means that it has a fixed duration to it. So for instance, like Pesach. Pesach has a fixed duration of 7 days. Therefore, a person might take a neder that says the neder terminates at the beginning of Pesach, or he might take a neder that it terminates at the end of Pesach because he knows what the duration of Pesach is, and he doesn't have any questions what that means when he says the end of Pesach. On the other hand, when you have items that have flexible times associated with them, as the Rosh says, that the harvest can last different amounts of time, depending on the weather, depending on the country, depending on the year, and depending on many other factors, the harvest has different durations to it. So a person generally will not take such a neder that has neder now has to deal with when is the termination of this object, because he doesn't know when it will terminate, because it's some unclear time in which it will end. And because of that, the person focuses on the beginning of that time period and does not focus on the completion of that time period. Now the Rosh explains why that is. He says, "Ein bedato lachnis atzmo biisur zman sheni yadulo." Person never intends to put himself into a period of time of isur where he doesn't know the outcome or he doesn't know the duration. Kama yimashich, how long will it go for? Vachia kia kamar. And whenever he puts a nether in place, then he always means that we will deem his statement to mean until the beginning of that period, because we know that people don't take nidarim that put them into this uncertainty as to when the completion is or when the end is, because they are talui in some sort of flexibility of completion, because they don't have a fixed duration to them. So in that case, the way that you would explain the Mishnah is that ada katsir, ada batsir, ada masik are time periods that are not fixed. Those are time periods which are flexible. The previous Mishnah, out of Pesach, had the example of something that had a fixed time period. And what the Mishnah here is telling you is that there's a difference between out of Pesach versus out of Katsir. Out of Katsir and out of Pesach, or Achiyagia Katsir, Achiyagia Pesach means until they come, till they start. Achiyahei Pesach means until Pesach is finished. Achiyah Katsir still means until the beginning of the Katsir, because of this natural difference between them, which is that Katsir is not of a fixed duration. Whereas Pesach is something of a fixed duration. It's always 7 days. All right, so then the Mishnah continues, and then we'll go back and discuss this, because what I just said is the majority of Rishonim's opinions, but there are dissenters within this, and that will explain. The Mishnah continues and says, Ad HaKayitz, Ad Shehei HaKayitz, Ad Shitchilu Am Nachnis B'Kalkalot. Ad HaKayitz, the person who's speaking about until the Kayitz, he also says, Ad Shehei HaKayitz, that's the same as saying, as we said before, it's called Zaman Jeno Kavua, anything that doesn't have a fixed time. It's the equivalent of saying Achiyagia, means until it starts. Well then, what is the definition of the start of the Kayitz? That the Mishnah gives you, Achiyatchilu Am Achnis B'Kalkalot. It's when the people start to either place the figs into the baskets, or they begin to bring the large baskets into the house, Achnis Otam Abayta. So the Rambam here explains that the kayit, shem limot ashrav, it is a term to describe the hot time periods, the summertime. Aval hayam mifursam ze hashem etzlam, but by them, the word kayit, even though it has a more generic sense, which means the summertime, that they used to explain it, al zman bishula te'inim. They used to speak about the ripening of the figs, meaning that they specifically associated it with the ripening of the figs. And therefore, the description in the Mishnah here about kayitz, the beginning of the kayitz, the tail end of the kayitz, will all revolve around the fig harvest. So they saw the fig harvest as being the primary activity of the summer. And therefore, based on that, the kayitz, the word kayitz now became, in a sense, conflated with the fig harvest. And therefore, kayitz stopped meaning summertime and started to mean the fig harvest, which obviously there's a huge overlap between them, or there's some common denominator between them. That's how the Rambam explains what's going on in this Mishnah. Now, before we move on, there is Rav Elazar Mimitz, it's quoted here by the Tosafot, it's also quoted by the Rosh, says that when the Mishnah said over here the principle of Kol Shezman Al Kavua and Kol Shein Zman Al Kavua, it was not referencing to the examples of Ara Katsir, Ara Batsir, and Ara Mesik. You know why? All of those are items that Zmanam Kavua, that have a fixed duration to them. But rather, the explanation of that general principle that's laid out in the Mishnah actually starts now, which is Ara Kayitz, Ad Shehei Akayitz. The Mishnah is describing something that does not have a fixed duration to it, and that is the harvest of the Te'inim, which is actually, the Rosh quotes over here, that part of the nature of the fig harvest is, Enu Melaktam Ke'achat. You don't collect them at one time. It's actually a harvest that spreads over a period of time and is not in a very concentrated time. Most harvests or collection of vegetables or fruits or harvest of grains take place over a very short period of time. And you basically harvest the field nonstop over a week's period and it's all done. On the other hand, the Te'inim, they ripen at different speeds. And therefore, the harvest takes place over a duration of time because you harvest those that are ripe and you come back for those that are yet to ripen. And if it stands over time, it's what's called Ein Likyatan Ke'achat. It actually has Nafkaminot in Zraim with regards to Dinei Masrot. The Te'inim are identified as things that are Ein Likyatan Ke'achat, that they don't have a fixed harvest because they do not get collected at the same time. So what Rabbi Lezmi Mitz says is that everything until now was fixed. That means Pesach, Katsir, Batsir, Misik. Those are fixed duration times. On the other hand, now we begin examples of things that do not have a fixed duration to them. And this is the first example. And his proof is from the Lashon HaMishnah. The Mishnah only starts to bring up Ad Shehei when it starts Ad HaKayitz. You don't see the Mishnah saying Ad HaKatsir, Ad HaBatsir, Ad HaMisik, and then say Ad Shehei, and explain that Ad Shehei is the same as Ad, but except for the first time here. Here's the first time the Mishnah gives that example, which is Ad HaKayitz, Ad Shehei HaKayitz. So that's what Rabbi Elazar Mimitz says is the transition. So he says that anything that has a fixed time associated with it, that includes anything that generally happens over a period of time that is known. It doesn't have to be exact, but is well known. Or you could argue anything that is mano kavua means it has a fixed time in which it starts. It has a fixed time to start, even though it doesn't have a fixed duration to it. And he says all those are included. What is a case of eno kavua? So both Tosafot and the Rosh give examples of a person says, well, until so-and-so comes from such and such city, or until the completion of that war. So those are things that he really has no clue as to when they're going to end and to the type of duration. And in that sense, those are things that are completely out of his control and things that do not have any fixed time to them. And so because of that, those are called Enu Kavua. Now, the Tosafot and the Rosh both reject the position of Rabbi Elazar Mimitz. The Rosh, for practical reasons, just says it's just not true. We know that the harvest, the duration of the harvest changes from year to year. It depends on the nature of the bountiful crops of some years, as well as the scarcity of crops in other years, as well as the weather and many other factors that change the duration of the harvest. And he disagrees with Rabbi Elazar Mimitz with regards to this. And the Rosh adds another reason not to hold like the Rabbi Elazar Mimitz is that the Zaklau seems to be referencing something that we've said already. And that would indicate that we've already had examples of Zmanam Kavua and Ein Zmanam Kavua. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar Mimitz, we only have had examples of Zman Okavua until now, and the Ein Zman Okavua comes after Zaklau, which is not generally the structure of a Mishnah. Zaklau either starts off the Mishnah, or it's the tail end of the Mishnah once you've had examples of both items. And the Balei Tosafot say the same thing, that Vindli Nira, and he says, why does the Mishnah delineate Ad Shehei by Kayitz? Damar Ad Shehei Kayitz, Ad Shehetchilu Latet B'Kakalot, Alma, Inu Asur Ad Shehetzei, Vein Zman Okavua, Tassinanle. And the reason that they brought Ad HaKayitz over to Ad Shehei HaKayitz is because it's something that needs definition. It's not clear what the definition is, but the same thing would be true with Ad HaKatsir, Ad HaBatsir, Ad HaMesik, which have much clearer defined beginnings and ends, even though that duration is not fixed, but it's clear and you wouldn't have to define them in a Mishnah. The Kayitz needed more explanation. That's why the Mishnah explicated that term versus the other three terms in the beginning of the Mishnah. So, till they bring them into the basket. So most of the Rishonim explain here, that means that they place them into the baskets. And as the Rosh gives explanation to that, why is that important? Because, lo shi kotsu arai, not that they harvest them on a haphazard basis, until they start harvesting them in a serious manner, and therefore they pile them up in the baskets, meaning that they are bringing in large quantities. So it now becomes a real harvest, not just going out to the field and picking a couple of them off. How do you identify that? That's by the large baskets being filled with the figs. Now, whether it means that baskets themselves are filled with the figs, which seems to be what Rashi is saying over here, or the Rosh is somewhat unclear, but others suggest that means until they bring, yachnisu, they bring in the baskets that are filled with the figs. But either way, it means that we've entered into a much more serious period of the harvest. Then if the person says this, ad she'avor ha'kaitz, he specifies, I want this neder to be in effect until the summer has passed, or until the date, the fig harvest has passed. Ad she'akpilu ha'maktsuot. It's until this activity has taken place. Here you have a machloket again in the Rishonim. The Rambam in the Perusha Mishnayot says these maktsuot are machaltsuot. They are reed mat that they used to place down upon which they dried the figs. So once they have rolled up the mats that are used to dry the figs out in the fields, that signals the end of the harvest. So when the majority of people have rolled up their mats, now majority can mean the majority of mats have been rolled up, or is it the majority of people who are involved in the harvest have rolled up, either one, but once the majority of them have rolled them up, then that, you know, is the end of the fig harvest. That's the way the Rambam explains it. And the Rosh actually brings that shita of the Rambam as a second shita. Most of the Rishonim explain that the maksuot are actually knives. And they're based on that, they give different explanations. Either these are the sakinim, shekatsutsuban. These are the knives by which they cut the figs, meaning that once the figs are done drying out, and they've pressed them together into the fig cakes, that they use these knives to cut them up. Umatzninotan, and then they put them away, kamog mikaplimet hakelim, that they then stop using these knives, and they put them away. Either they put them away to use with something else, or they put them away for next year. So Rashi says, what this shikapilu et amaksuot is that the knives that are used to work with these figs are now put away. They're put into the closet. That's one way to explain it. The Rosh, on the other hand, takes the word yakpilu literally, that they fold the knives, or the knife is put back into its sheath. Pilu means almost like a pocket knife that you would fold up, or a knife that's put back into its sheath, and that's what it means at yakpilu. Once they put the knives away, they fold up the knives, and they stop using the knives with regards to the figs, that signals the end of the kayitz, the end of the fig harvest. Rashi brings a second interpretation, which is inyan yacher, plu ad shechorei tzultan bekupit. That they start to either string up or compact these fig cakes together, and they use a kupit, some sort of hatchet or knife, to do this process, and already signals the end of the fig harvest. Others say that it simply is the placing of the gulei dvela, these circles of dvelot on top of each other. That's what yakpilu means. Makpilu amaktsuot is to put the actual fig cakes on top of each other. Now there is some conflation of the word maktsuot and kayitz over here. As the Rambam already said in the Perush Mishnayot, kayitz refers to summertime, and then it was lifted over to describe, be a part of the fig harvest, because that was the major activity during the time. And still beyond that, it moves from the word kayitz, because of kotzitzim, we're going to see, over to the fig cakes themselves, which become known as maktsuot as well. And so the word, which had a meaning about a specific time, let's say the summertime, then is conflated to mean not only that, but also the fig harvest. And then not only the fig harvest, but the fig cakes that come out of the fig harvest also get that name. And so therefore here, the shakpilu amaktsuot would mean the folding over or the piling up of these fig cakes, the pressing of these fig cakes together. The Gemara says, Tano, kalkala shamru, kalkala shel te'inim. And we're talking about the kayitz and the basket that's brought in. We're talking about baskets of figs. Below kalkala shel anavim, but not baskets of grapes. The grape harvest takes place very similar time to the fig harvest. They overlap. And therefore, when we talk about the kalkala, the basket of fruits that are being brought in here, we're specifically speaking about figs and not speaking about grapes. Tanya. Hanuder mi perot hakayitz. Someone takes a nether from the fruits of the summer. In asur el b'te'inim. He's only restricted in figs. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel omer, anavim bichlal te'inim. That anavim are a subset of figs, because basically they are both harvested during the summer. And why we say that the grapes are subsumed under te'inim is because te'inim were all put together, pressed, and dried out, whereas grapes have different usage. Grapes, in their time, in the majority, were not eaten for fruit, but they were either pressed for wine, or they were made into raisins. So there are a part of the crop that will be taken and made into raisins similar to the processing of the figs. That's what I mean. Anavim bichlal teinim. Anavim also have this process in the summertime in the heat where they are picked around the same time and they are put out in the fields to dry to make into raisins and to make into dried figs. So therefore, when you take a neder from Perot HaKayitz, that should include not only teinim but also anavim. My time of the Tana Kama. What is the reasoning behind the Tana Kama's position that he believes that summer fruits only include figs and not dates? Kasavar, teinim, miktsatsan, bida. Teinim are picked by hand. Anavim, lo miktsatsan, bida. Whereas grapes are not picked by hand. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel savar, anavim, nami. Anavim also, grapes also, ki, miradadan, miktsatsan, bida. That when they are dried out, they also are cut by hand or picked by hand. Tosafot brings an alternate gears over here, which is Lishna Achrina, Mizradan, Kamo Kabile Zradin, like piles of tinder or kindling, which means like dried out small sticks, and it's again referring to the stems of the clusters that have been dried out. The way that one harvests figs is by picking them off by hand. If that's the case, it's like kutzeitz, someone who picks off the fruit, the vegetable, and therefore mikatzitzan, or the terminology kayitz, is only associated with figs which are picked by hand. And then grapes cannot be picked by hand. They are in large clusters whose stem is still moist and tough. And it's very hard to pick grapes by hand. Anybody who's picked grapes knows that you need shears or you need something very sharp to cut this stem that's holding up the cluster. And therefore, they're not harvested by hand. And the difference between grapes and teinim is the way that they're harvested. And therefore, the word kayitz is specifically associated with teinim and not with grapes. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel agrees. You're right. Generally, grapes are harvested by kli, and teinim, figs, are harvested by hand. But there is a time period when grapes are also harvested by hand, and that is when we get to the point where the stem holding the cluster on the vine starts to dry out. Once it's dried out enough, you can pick it or snap it off without the use of a kli. So there are times that in Avim that grapes are also picked by hand. And since they're also picked by hand, they should be subsumed in the terminology of kites. Of course, the Tana Kama knows what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, but that he says that's not the majority. That's not the primary way in which grapes are harvested. The primary way in which grapes are harvested is by kli. Achi vora kites, achi kapalu amaktzot, Tana. Achi kapalu rov amaktzot. So the majority of them have rolled up, and as we discussed in the Mishnah, that rov here could mean the rov of the people that are harvesting have done it. Or the robe of the item has been put away. So the Rambam talks about the robe of the mats. All the other Rishonim, which are speaking about knives, and we are talking about the robe of the knife, whether it means to put it away, whether it means to fold it up, whether it means to cut the gulei dvelah, press them together, or to string them up. Whatever the meaning is, the majority has to be done, and that signals the end of that period of time. Tana, hukpalu robe amaktsuot, mutarot mishum gezel, upturot min amasrot. Once you reach that time period within the fig harvest, then we can assume that the figs that remain in the field at that point in time, the Baal HaBayit has been mafkir, and he's been mafkir them. First of all, there's no gezel, there's no more theft, because he has no interest in getting them, or he doesn't plan on getting them. Ubturot min amasrot, and they're also patur min amaser, because hefker is patur min amaser. Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda iklu lahawatro. Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda were traveling to a certain city, Bizmanj Hukpalu Rova Maktuot, at this time period in which the end of the fig harvest had arrived, based on the definition of our Mishnah. Rabbi Avakachil, the rabbis took the figs that were in the fields and ate them. Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Loachil, he would not eat them. At the Marhon, the owner of the figs came out, Amarlo, Amar Loachle Rabbonon, why don't you Rabbonon partake in my figs? Hukpalu Rova Maktuot, who? It's already reached the time period where it's hukpalu rova maksot, and therefore you're entitled to eat them. They're hefker. Vafel pikein lo achil Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda nevertheless demurred and refused to eat from these figs. Kosovar, because he believed mishum sanyut milta hu dekamar hadin gavra, that this individual only said this because of sanyut. Rashi says sanyut is mira alev, did it out of his, wasn't a generous person. The Ran continues to say that Klomar Gvari Tartem Otam Latzmechem. He was saying it in a cynical, sarcastic manner. Well, why don't you help yourself to the figs? It's already the time period where you guys think it's okay to take the figs. So he was saying it, it's a person who was not generous, did not want them to take it, and he was saying it in a sarcastic manner, not out of sincerity. The Rosh, on the other hand, explains, Sanyut Milta is Davar Sanui V'Gnai Hayalo. This was something that was beneath his dignity, or he was, in a sense, too embarrassed to tell them the truth. Imlo Yomar Lahem Shiochu. Because it would be considered inappropriate if he didn't allow the Rabbonon to eat here. V'lomini Dibut Leiva Markein. But not out of the generosity of his heart he did this, because he was in a bind. They were there, and it would be considered to be miserly, or unsocial, or improper for him to stop the Chachamim from doing this. So therefore he was compelled to say, go ahead, you can do it. But that's not really what he wanted, and it's not really what he meant. And therefore Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda refused to eat, because he didn't believe that the owners of the figs really meant to be mafkir them to the individuals, and that many of these owners kept them, or believed that they were still theirs, and intended to pick them up way after the time period of Rova Maktzot. Okay, we'll stop over here. 9 lines down on Samach Bet, Amud Aleph.